We think there's no cost to overpraising children today. And there is a cost to overpraising children. Every time you praise your child, you are communicating to them where the standard is. If your goal is just to lower the bar so far, you know, and just push it all the way into the ground so that, you know, your kids can trip over it and be successful, it will really impact their ability to succeed in life. And fathers are built to stretch their children.
You are the foundation of your family. You are the firm footing they build their lives on. You carry a glorious burden, and you never dream of laying it down. You carry it with joy and gratitude. You show up, even when you don't feel like it. You lead, serve, love, and protect. You are a father. This is the Dad Work Podcast, where men are forged into elite husbands and fathers by learning what it takes to become harder to kill, easier to love, and equipped to lead. Get ready to start building the only legacy that truly matters, your family.
But dads, we're back for another episode of the Dad Work Podcast, round two with Jeremy Pryor. First of all, do you want to just give us a quick bio, who you are, what you do, family, ministry, everything else that you're working on, and we'll dive in.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Kurt, thanks for doing this. I'm excited to talk to you all. So, yeah, I'm live in the Kentucky area, grew up in Seattle, have five kids, married to my wife, April. We met each other in Jerusalem back in 1997. I did a lot of ministry kind of things in the first 8 years, and then for the last, I guess, 23 years, we've just been starting businesses. So we've started a whole series of different companies that we have worked on as a family and with different partners. And so today we work in an organization called Family Teams. That's probably our biggest effort right now. And we're working to try to restore the biblical blueprint of family to the church. And so we have lots of different events. I do a lot of coaching of dads that are transitioning from and just families transitioning out of employment into entrepreneurship, mostly for the sake of integrating their faith and family into the rest of their lives. So that's a huge passion of mine.
Man. Okay. Well, you know what? That's why I'm so interested in what you do, because that was the thing that connected me to you. And that's actually why you and I are going to meet in like 5 days in the Integrated Mastermind. So I'm really looking forward to that. Excited to get that whole, I mean, it says it all, right? The integration. Yes. That's what I'm looking for. How do I integrate my family into my business, into my ministry, into my fun? Like you said, I think last time on the podcast, you're like, I don't want to know when I'm having fun versus family time versus ministry time versus working time. It's all the same, which is like super aspirational for me. So anyway, we'll meet in a few days. I'm excited for that. But so guys, what we're going to do today, Jeremy throws things up on his Instagram, like little tweets, and they're just screenshots from what I can tell. I went to Twitter because I'm not really on there. And I'm like, oh, he's got tons of tweets that are like actually really brilliant ideas for dads that I think you guys want to hear. But what I wanted to do is just like, here's the 140 characters. Maybe you can put more on there. I haven't been on Twitter for so long. Whatever. It's not even called Twitter anymore, I don't think. But like, let's read through a tweet here because it's an idea. And I want Jeremy to expound on that a little bit, and I'll jump in with a few questions along the way. But these are like, there's only like three people liking the tweets because for some reason you don't have that many followers. So let's, number one, go follow him on Twitter. But number two, guys, like these ideas need to be heard by the thousands of people who listen to this podcast, because I think they'll help you do what Jeremy just said, which is become a better father and integrate everything into your life. So I'm just going to start reading, and then I want you to talk about what the idea was behind that. So the first one, the tweet says, low demand parenting means our kids will struggle meeting their full potential. Low support parenting means kids will feel empty, vulnerable, and unloved. Optimal parenting is both high demand and high support. Man, can you define some terms here? Low demand, low support, high support. What do these things mean? Because I think there's a huge opportunity here, which is why it's number one.
Yeah, this is huge. So, and this really came from Daniel Coyle's book, The Culture Code. And so he describes what really good coaching is. It's probably my favorite fatherhood book of all time. And it's not about fatherhood at all. It's basically about how you create a certain kind of culture within an organization. Because I believe families are startups, and that fathers are leaders and coaches, head coaches of their organization, call a family, then you really need to level up your coaching skills. And COIL, and there was a team, I don't know who actually did the research, but they actually did a pretty exhaustive research on who was the greatest coach of all time. And I think it was Popovich. I think he coached the Spurs. And what they did was they tried to control for, you know, all the variables that you're going to get with a team, you know, money and all kinds of variables that would create outliers. And they said, okay, if everything was equal and you could just focus on the coaching itself, who was the greatest coach? Who took, you know, a mediocre team or sort of maybe an average team and brought them to absolute greatness through the act of coaching? And that was the research. That's who they determined was the greatest coach of all time, just by the results he was able to create, given where he started. And there's a lot of crazy insights about coaching, but one of them was this idea that you need to raise the bar on your demand and support at the same time. And the problem is that most coaches, most fathers, tend to be either high support, low demand, or high demand, low support. And we tend to go waffle back and forth generationally. So you have, you know, the stereotypical son who is raised by a high demand, low support dad. And so he just was miserable and could never please his dad and brought the report card home. And the dad was like, well, why did you get this 1B? Never said a good job, son. I'm proud of you, son. Any of those things. It was all demand, 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 low support. And to get just one, you know, inkling of a of a positive encouragement from his dad was just really difficult. And so, of course, what he does in the next generation is he's like, I'm not going to be that kind of dad. I don't care, son, what your grades are. I don't care if you perform. I just love you who you are. And so he goes low demand, high support. And this goes back and forth, you know, across generations, because we don't seem to understand. Because if you just go by your instinct, you tend to be one of the others. I tend to be a low demand, high support father. That's definitely my default setting. So everybody listen to this, please take a second and try to discover your default setting. Are you just naturally high support, low demand, or are you just naturally high demand, low support? And what really creates an incredible experience when you're being coached is to experience both at the same time. And because very, very few people actually naturally do both well, then you just have to choose to find a way to level up the one that's lower. And this creates an amazing experience for children. They love one of the greatest myths today, I would say, about children and about family and fatherhood is that kids don't want high demand fathers. Again, because I think we've all heard the horror stories, or some of us have experienced them, of the high demand, low support father. But we don't understand that no, like people need the expectations to be raised. Like if you just tell your kids, look, you know, I just, whoever you are, whatever you do is always going to be good. It's always acceptable. There are no standards here. Your children will underperform their entire life likely. And you as a father need to help your children level up. They need to become the best at whoever they are. Now, I think that one of the problems that I think oftentimes we struggle with is you do have to calibrate those high demands or those high expectations for the individual children. And this is why I think, you know, we have a small number of children. We're not given 100 kids to father. We're given however many. I have 5. That's a lot. But five is still a small enough number that I should be able to dial in, hey, this is what I expect from you. And one of the greatest things that a coach does is that they can figure out what you could do if you were really trying your best. And great coaches have an instinct for that. And so when they watch a player, they stand back and watch a quarterback, and they're like, you know what? You're just not trying hard enough. Like, I know you could do better than this, you know? And that is incredibly motivating, right? Would you rather have a coach that, let's say, properly dials in what you're actually capable of and calls you to that higher standard? Or would you rather have a coach that pats you on the back and says, yeah, you threw 18 interceptions, but you know, that's great. We love just the fact that you got out there and tried. Here's your participation trophy. Like, you know, that is not going to help you as an individual succeed in life. And so we have to learn how to raise both of these at the same time. And I think there was a generation that really did struggle with low support side of things. You know, you do have those demanding, judgmental fathers who never really understood how to encourage his children. And so we tend to, because we're in an age of just hypersensitivity, those stories actually resonate much more deeply with us. We're far more appalled at the high demand, low support father than we are of the high support, low demand father. And so I'm here to say, I just want to say, like, both are bad. Like, both are going to lead to suboptimal outcomes for your children. And so you have to, because so many of us already kind of dialed into the low demand, high support side of this, many of us just really want to constantly encourage our kids and, good job, buddy. And we're just running around like just endlessly praising children. And that creates expectations for our kids. We think that there's no cost to overpraising children today. And there is a cost to overpraising children. Every time you praise your child, you are communicating to them where the standard is. If your goal is just to lower the bar so far, you know, and just push it all the way into the ground so that, you know, your kids can trip over it and be successful, it will really impact their ability to succeed in life. And fathers are built to stretch their children. That's the overarching principle I'm wrestling with there.
Mm, man, thank you for that. I love that, because as I continue to learn more and grow more as a father, as a Christian, I'm like, oh, there is this, I would call it the middle way, the path, if you will, that is both. And I keep seeing the fact that there is the right way to do things, and then there's a ditch on either side.
That's right.
And it seems like this is definitely the ditch. And it's just like what I say about, you know, what I think mature masculinity is, which is hard to kill, easy to love. Yes. Both of those things must be in high enough, you know, levels to be that fully mature man. And here, man, I'm maybe different because I'm high demand.
Are you?
And I have really had to work on the high support as well. So maybe just for, like, I want to move on to some of the other ones, but quickly, what are some of the things that a high demand, low support dad can do? And what are some of the things that the opposite, if, you know, you're looking for more demand out of your children? I think even just knowing how important it is should be a good motivator, but tactically, are there things that come to mind?
Yeah. So I would say if you tend to be like me, where you just, you want to overpraise constantly, you want to constantly signal support and you want to lower the bar, I think that one of the things that you need to really work on, so one of the greatest tips, I think, is to praise effort and don't, instead of praising things like intelligence or anything that's innate to your child. There's been a lot of research done on this. And so you can imagine, like, I think the research would basically say that if you take a group of kids and they performed a task and half of them you say, you know, you're so smart. Like, it's amazing how smart you are. And the other kids, you're saying, wow, you tried really hard. Like, your effort was awesome. Like, then they go and do the next task. It's very predictable that the ones praised for effort will do far better at the task. And the ones praised for their intelligence will actually do worse than previously. And so part of it is, if you want to praise your children, careful about the topic. Praise your kids for things they can level up in, like their effort. I think another thing that's really helpful for low demand fathers is to think about things from a scale of 1 to 10, instead of like awesome, you know, perfect, great, and you know, and then oftentimes a low demand parent won't say anything negative. But really stand back when you see your kids do something, give them a grade. Like, judge them and say, okay, that was about a 6. Kids love that. They're like, what, a 6? What's a 7? What's an 8? Like, a whole world opens up for them that they could do better, you know? And then, so if you find something you're coaching your children in, whether it's like cleaning the kitchen or, you know, supporting your, you know, their mother, or, you know, doing something around the house, or doing something in sports, or try to judge them on a scale of 1 to 10. And then tell them how to get better. Okay, that was a 6. Like, a 7 or an 8 might look like this. Why don't you try that again? Like, that's what you need to do in your low demand. You have to start to look at scales instead of, you know, just a yes, no, pass, fail. And I think the pass, fail thing is really, really is difficult for it'll cause a low demand father to not know how to actually coach because, you know, they passed. What else can I say? No. That was a 6. That was a 7. That was a 4. You know, you can do a lot better. Let's try that again. So that's what it looks like. I would say on the other side, a high demand, low support father, I think needs to, there's a sense, and the book, The Culture Code talks about this really well. You have to find a way to signal unconditional belonging to your children. Like, you are always my son. I love who you are. I love how God made you. There is a sense of like peace and acceptance, not an acceptance that like I am for who you are becoming, right? You don't do it in a way that undermines everything that you're going to do on the demand side, but you definitely want to demonstrate that they are safe with you, that their love, your love for them is going to persist regardless of their performance. Again, you can still judge a child and let them know there's a long ways they can go and have high standards without necessarily tying acceptance to that. And I think that, hey, you're a part of this family, and you know, and so saying I love you, son, I'm, you know, the ultimate high support moment in all of human history was the moment when God said to his son, you know, you are my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. And I think a lot of times high demand fathers have a hard time saying that. They instinctually think by saying that they're signaling you have nothing left to do, and so, but no, you're saying I delight in you as my son or daughter. I enjoy you. And you are mine, and I love that about you. And so you want your child to feel that way. But I think having on the other side, having kind of more of a scale than that pass fail allows that father to say, no, you're not signaling you're a 10 in every area of life. And that's why I think going back and actually giving your children a scale on which they can improve will help you kind of release your heart to be affectionate and accepting and loving of your children without necessarily suggesting that they have arrived.
Amazing. I love this format already. Thank you for all of that. And yeah, you're right. I think that is so key for me to continually look back on is what did God the Father do to God, the Jesus, his son,
yes,
which is, he says, I love you. So he loves, yes. He affirms, and in that gives him an identity, I think.
That's right.
Which is, you are my son. And that is so important work I'm doing on myself right now, you know, with the father self, thankfully, this time around. But let's move on to the second one, which says, is a quote of a tweet, again, from Jeremy. Fathers, tell your kids the backstory. To our children, blessings just appear out of nowhere, so they naturally take all these gifts as entitlements. It's our job to reveal what really goes into what we take for granted. And the reason I picked this quote, that was the end of the quote, by the way, the reason I picked this one is because there's so much of my story. There's so many gifts and blessings that I feel in my life that only came from hardship.
Yeah,
that I don't want my kids to have to go through, but I want them to learn the lesson.
Right.
And so let's talk a little bit about this one. Like, how can we give them that lesson by telling our struggle, I guess, might be the point of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that children in today, a lot of this does stem from the idea that we are telling individuals in the West that their own personal individual story is all that there ever was, all that matters. And I think that the backstory of where we came from as a family, you know, what we went through to get here, creates gratitude, creates perspective, creates identity. And there, for the modern Western family, there tends to be no arena for those stories. And so what, and I don't think we realize the cost of just, you know, having your kids born into a world in which, let's say it took 2 or 3 generations to get to a place where we own a house and we're pretty financially stable. And, you know, our borders are protected by people that are constantly fighting for our freedom, and all that's been secured. When you inherit all of that, and our children in the West have inherited enormous amounts from those who have struggled before, then if there's nobody telling the story, then there's no perspective, there's no gratitude, and you are robbing your children of all of the motivation that they might otherwise have, because they may have to fight again for those things. We don't know what kind of world our children are going to grow up in, and we are in this kind of weird place where a lot of a lot of families are going to struggle more in the next generation, especially financially, but maybe in other areas as well, than their parents or grandparents did. And so it's really important to tell the backstory and to say, hey, this is because, you know, you will take for granted those things, and the things you tend to take for granted, you tend to lose. And that whole, you know, sort of quote about those hard times and, you know, producing weak men and this cycle that is constantly happening, that I think that's created because nobody is taking responsibility to actually tell those stories. And so that there needs to be an arena for that. And so, you know, for us on the Sabbath, when we enter into like a timeless moment as a family where we tend to have about four generations at our typical Sabbath dinner, and this is every Friday night. And so we've had, the older you are in the family, the more responsibility you have for telling the backstory, because you remember, like when my grandmother was at our Sabbath table, she was spanning seven generations. And so if you think about, like, she has a relationship with people who were, you know, who lived in the mid 1800s, you know, all the way to she's seeing people who are going to, you know, persist into the, you know, deep into the 21st century. You know, that's an incredible span of perspective. And, you know, our culture today has almost no value for our elders because we don't care about the backstory. We don't understand how the stories themselves create identities and they create character. And so that's creating a place for that and having a time in your week where you are challenging people in your family to tell those stories. And if you don't have somebody upstream in your family, you know, grandparents who can be doing that, then start to do that yourself. Like, start to craft those stories. How has God been good to us? And you see, there's a psalm, I can't remember which psalm it is, but it commands this, like, tell the future generations, have them tell their children and have their children tell their children all of the things the Lord has done for you. And even when it talks about the Sabbath in Deuteronomy 5, when we're given the commandment to keep the Sabbath, you know, God says, so that you remember that you were slaves in Egypt. Like, remember the backstory, remember where you came from. And I always think that somebody who remembers that they came from slavery is going to have a totally different psychology about the challenges of life than somebody who says, I inherited all this because I deserve it, you know? And that is the default. People don't realize that when your kids have no gratitude, that makes sense. Like, they all these things, these entitlements, they just existed. You created that nice little nursery for them, then you put them down in it, and you've provided all this food and all this education and all this abundance and all this entertainment and all these things. And you don't realize that the medium is the message. You've inadvertently communicated to your child that they deserve all of this because you're not asking them to earn anything to do all of this. So they're just getting dumped on them blessing after blessing after blessing after blessing after blessing. And the least we can do is provide the backstory so that they could begin to have a perspective that could give them gratitude.
Yes, I love that. And one thing that I just want to touch on, because I know this is a dish for me, is when you're telling the story, I mean, tell it as a narrative. Don't tell it in frustration or annoyance, because I don't know if I want to use the word triggered because there's so many connotations, but I'm just going to say I was triggered to a point where I was like, don't you know what it was like for me growing up? You have it so easy, right? There's that whole story, which I know a lot of dads can get into. And it's like, that's probably not the right way to be telling your story. But if there's a narrative to it, and I think learning how to tell stories is probably a great thing for most men and fathers to do. But where did you come from? What were the struggles? How did you overcome? And then, like, yeah, like you said, deliver the blessing of that without the assumption for taking it for granted. Yeah, that's wonderful. And I love as well that you said to just start if you're the first person in your family can do this. Because I hear from a lot of guys who are like, well, I don't have a dad or a grandfather. Like, I'm a first generation chain breaker, so to speak. Then it starts with you. That's it.
Tell that story. And that's a powerful story. I think that's the most powerful story. That was Abraham's story. Mm-hmm. Abraham, you know, he had to leave his father, who is an idol worshiper, in order to start a whole new family line. And so, yeah, to tell those stories so that your children can see what, and I think part of, you know, I think there's a quote, something like, it's important that when you start on third base, you don't imagine that you hit a triple, right? And I think that's really important. But I think part of the reason why you want to explain to your children is not just because you're on third base and so look at how amazing your life is. It also raises the bar for what you expect from them. And that is that I expect you to get all the way home. Like, I did get you all the way to third base, you know, maybe me and your grandparents and your great grandparents, whoever it was, but in this is what's all inhabited in the single command to honor your father and mother. That command in scripture is designed so that the next generation has a sense of gravity and gratitude for the past, and that there's something really destructive that happens to the character of somebody who does not honor their father and mother, does not have value. So you want to, even if you are that chain breaker, you want to really try to mine the past for anything positive. If there's anything that your parents or grandparents or great grandparents did, or if not, then, you know, the wider culture that you live in, what do you appreciate? Let's take a minute and just appreciate whatever we have. I live in a really, I live in a town that I didn't grow up in. I grew up in a town south of Seattle. Now we live in Northern Kentucky. But in this town, I am constantly trying to understand the history of this town, because there's so many cool things happening in this town in terms of just it's very safe. There's a lot of community. There's something in the ethos, the spirit of this town, some things I don't like, but many things that I find really amazing. And my children are growing up here. And so it's like, let's honor the people who created this. We didn't create this. We just came in and bought a house here. You know, we pay taxes, but I don't for a minute think that somehow I deserve this, or our family deserves all of the, what has been created in this place. And so we want to like study the history. Everywhere you're going, study the history. What was going on in this town? What happened in this country? This is why we study history, to honor our father and mother. And that's a very broad command that creates this character of gratitude, of perspective. But I think it also creates vision. It allows children to map where they're at so they know how to take the family to the next step. And this is a huge problem. A lot of people believe that when you give children resources, then they invariably will have less resilience, and they will have less, they'll become lazy and entitled. It's not resources that create laziness and entitlement. It's resources without vision. It's when you don't say, look, this exists so that you can take the family further. One of my favorite examples of that is the Kennedy family. So Joseph Kennedy, he was a patriarch of that family, had 9 children. He was the third richest man in America. And you can say a lot of things about his children in terms of like things they did or didn't do or should have done. But one thing they were not, and that is lazy. You would think the third richest man in America would give birth to a huge brood of lazy children. And that is not what happened. Why? Very simple. Joseph Kennedy came in front of his children and said, I'm going to give you guys resources for one very specific vision, political power. And he told them a story about how there was a constant struggle that their family was having with people in politics. And so we're going to take over politics. We're going to take the presidency. And so you have, you know, obviously John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, who wanted to become a president. You had Teddy Kennedy, who he ran for the nomination. 3 of his sons all tried to get the presidency. Now, right currently, we have another Kennedy who's trying to win the presidency. That came because there was a patriarchal vision given to that family that was so powerful. And if you are going to hand your kids a lot of resources, please give them a vision big enough, like, to be worthy of those resources.
I love that. I got nothing to add to that. Let's move on to the next one. Thank you for that. Yeah. This is one that I want to get your opinion on. This is a tweet that I think you retweeted, and I saw it too, and I was like, oh man, I should try that out. And it's from Nick Huber, who is the sweaty startup guy, really big on Twitter right now. But he says, every time my boys fight with each other, I say, what team are you on? They both say, Huber team. Dad says, what does that mean? Kids say, we help each other win. Does this work? Is this a good idea? And how can we ensure that our kids are on the same page rather than bickering with each other? I know a lot of guys struggle with that. Kids are just coming at each other. It's going to happen sometimes, obviously. But does this actually work?
Yes, it does. And I think you have to understand what this entails. So kids in our culture today believe that the family is a springboard for individual success. So the family has a finite amount of resources. Mom has a finite amount of attention. Dad has a finite amount of attention. We have a finite amount of rooms in our house, a finite amount of food at the table, all these things. And so as an individual who gets a finite piece of the resources of the family, you know, can you drive me to this friend's house? Can you drive me over to, I want to do this sport. When you think that way about family, what it turns every sibling into a rival by default. Why? Because you have a fixed pie, right? And if there's only two kids, then I get half and you get half. All of a sudden a third kid comes. What happens to the pie? You know, now I get a third. Oh, now it comes a fourth kid. Now I get a quarter. Like, it makes sense why if the family is a springboard for individual success, there's going to be a lot of rivalry between siblings because they are taking resources from each other, this finite pie. Now, I don't believe at all that that's the family, but I think that the vast majority, almost 100% of Western families think about the family in those terms, that the family is a springboard for individual success. They raise their family that way. There's a totally different way to think about family. And this is what Nick is kind of articulating. And this is definitely the way that I try to raise our family. And that is, we're a team. Okay. We together are trying to accomplish things. Now, if we're all individuals fighting over the same scarce resources, we're all rivals. But if we're on a team and we're together trying to accomplish something, then every new person that comes on the team becomes not a liability, but an asset. It's like, oh my gosh, I just got a teammate. Like, how amazing is that? Like, I'm going to be able to accomplish way more together because there are more kids in the family. And so why in the world would you constantly be fighting and competing against your sibling if you're a team? And so in order to make this transition, you have to start with identity. And what Nick is doing in his tweet is he's describing the process of giving your children an identity as teammates as opposed to as rivals. Again, it's really important to understand that the rivalry, that is totally normal and that is default. So you have to do the work as a father to begin to convince your children, no, we're on the same team. And I think sometimes you actually need to create arenas where this actually happens, where you as a team are going out on the field together and you can sense and feel the strength of the sibling relationships actually working as a team to accomplish something that we could not otherwise accomplish apart from each other. So I'm constantly trying to find arenas. We just got back from 3 weeks in Seattle. Our family regularly goes out to a camp and leads a boot camp for 3 weeks. It's an intense program. I direct it, me and my wife, and we bring all of our kids. And it is game time for our family because we're serving, you know, hundreds of different people at this camp, and we're given 20 high school kids. And so I come back to this arena because I can sense that it causes my children to see each other as teammates. And so we've done this. This is our fourth year that we've done this this event. We also take our kids overseas a lot in order to experience this. I mean, you go to a third world country with your kids, and man, they will be teammates. Yeah. Like, it's like us against the world. You need to put your family. You need to practice and then take your family into the game. And if you do that, then your kids will start to experience, wow, this sibling's an ally. And so you want to, and sometimes people experience this growing up in rough neighborhoods, you know, and you grow up in a rough neighborhood and you're protected by your siblings. All of a sudden you're a team, but you grow up in a safe neighborhood. Again, the default is rivals. And so you have to find things that challenge your family collectively and take your family into those arenas, and your kids will start. And so if you start with this language, we're team Pryor, you know, we're team Huber. If you start with this language and you create this identity and then take your family into that one of those arenas to allow them to actually sense it, when you get back, they will see each other differently. And that's what we're going for. And that takes work.
And I think one of the other things that comes to mind here is maybe having that vision you were talking about in the last question. The father needs to have a vision so that there is somewhere for them to go together.
Yes.
Is that part of it?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. So you have to figure out what that is. What's the big, and your vision has to align with your resources. Jesus told the story of the talents. And so what I always really, and so Kurt's joined our group Integrated. And one of the things I'm constantly challenging people who, it's a fatherhood mastermind. Everyone in the group is a high performing entrepreneur. And so one of my biggest concerns for these dads is that you are 10 talent men with one talent vision. And that is exactly what Jesus is confronting. if God has provided you with 10 talents, if he's given you a business, given you skills, given you lots of kids, given you an amazing wife, whatever those talents are that you have as a family, it's okay to be a one talent person with a one talent vision. That's fine. Jesus is like, he has tons of grace for that. But it's not cool to be a five talent or 10 talent family with a one talent vision. And so, that is on the Father. And so if you find yourself with an abundance of resources, with an abundance of relational strength as a family or spiritual strength as a family, then you need to have a vision that will challenge whatever those resources are, that will make it difficult, that you find the biggest mountain your family can climb that successfully and go for it. And there should be risk involved. It should be really, really difficult.
Man, that is such a convicting phrase, a 10-talent man with a one-talent vision. Ooh, I'm feeling that one already, so thank you. Yeah. All right, the next one that I want to put on here is blasting modern culture, which is one of my favorite pastimes. Modern culture has redefined freedom. Ancient freedom is the ability to overcome one's base impulses in order to follow our good intentions. Modern freedom is following our base impulses without regard to the consequences. Ancient freedom frees us from modern freedom. That's the end of the quote there. Man, the modern goal today seems to just be like, how comfortable can I be? That's right. I think this is a beautiful way to tear that apart. So is there anything else to say on this one?
Well, I think it is important to say that you do need to realize that the definition of freedom has changed. Like that took me a long time to realize. We're given this default definition of freedom, which is I need the ability to indulge my impulses. If you read philosophy or theology at all, you will constantly hear people talking about the problem, like the thing that stops us from freedom are all of the things that are inside of us. Like the biggest battle every man has to fight is within himself. And so we already have we're enslaved by nature, right? Jesus said that, like everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And so we are struggling with slavery constantly. And so freedom looks like having the kind of character, having the power of the Holy Spirit, having the ability to overcome all of these impulses that are naturally going to drive you into things that you don't want, places you do not want to go. In the Proverbs, I always love the idea that the father is taking his son, you know, around the village and pointing out different things. Like you see that man who's like, you know, his field is just destroyed. His kids don't respect him. He's drunk half the time. He didn't set out to lead that family in that direction. That is something that happens. And this is, we have to give our sons and daughters this understanding of how slavery happens, how, okay, this slow degrading process of giving into your impulses, not knowing how to overcome all of the things that are happening within you. You have to fight that battle first. And that battle never ends. Like we always are struggling with the flesh. This is a constant refrain in the New Testament. And so there's so much about freedom in philosophy and theology and in the Bible, and it's always talking about the constant struggle we have internally with our flesh. And so so that's the historic idea. Now you have just this constant refrain from the culture about you need more freedom, you need more rights, and they're actually talking about the opposite of what has always been the definition of that freedom, and that is that it's always an external force. And that these external forces are trying to inhibit your freedom, take away choices from you. And if you could just get more freedom dust dumped on you, more choices, then your life is going to get better and better and better and better. And that is a total lie. Like the problem is you have to overcome these enslaving problems and tensions, enslaving patterns, enslaving elements of your own flesh and nature. And it's in overcoming those things that you really achieve freedom. We have so much, our problems, and especially in the West, are 100 times more within than in any kind of external problem that we're having with freedom. So I think that for me, I had to listen every time somebody says something about freedom, particularly in the political world, and just say, what are they saying? Are they talking about me real freedom, like freedom from all of these impulses so that I can live the life that I know that God has designed for us to live in? Or are they talking about more external freedom so that I can give into those impulses more frequently? that is, those are so totally different. One is just abject foolishness, and the other is, has been, is the time honored truth about the way that freedom and slavery really works.
It reminds me of the idea of boundaries and having to be able, thriving within some boundaries. And for most of us, myself included, growing up in this culture that we're talking about right now, it's like, man, if I can just have like zero boundaries and be totally free to do everything, awesome. But guess what? That's what I thought was cool when I was 16. And now I look back going like, why didn't anybody give me any rules or boundaries? Like, I'm not going to make that mistake. Yes. But someone told me this way, and I'm not sure who it was, so I can't give due credit, but it's like, imagine if you just had a hose running in a field and you just run the hose. Well, there's like a massive flood and the field gets ruined. But if you put that hose within the confines of a pool, you have a wonderful thing that then is within the boundaries. So I think that's really important for guys to understand. It's really important for me to continue to reflect on, actually, because freedom, sovereignty is a big one for me that I get caught up in, and I need to be sure that I'm looking for freedom from rather than freedom to. So thank you for breaking that down. There's another one here that, you know, goes again back into the culture, but it's about fathering and mothering. And this is one of my favorite topics that you touch on, particularly the Bluey thing, which we won't get into here because we got into last time. But it says, quote, "Our culture confuses good parenting with good mothering because it hates fathering. Children need mothers and fathers. When fathers strive to become good mothers, they rob their children of half of what they need to mature," end quote. Man, you're going to get canceled for even like tweeting or even thinking this. And I had my most popular reel, so I got like 90,000 views, is saying that parenting is not gender neutral. Would you please go a little bit more into this? Because this is so shocking for even what I would consider probably like conservative Christian men. This is still a shocking idea.
That's right. Yeah. This is a huge one. I 100% agree. I actually don't think there is such a thing as parenting. So in the New Testament, there is no word for parenting. In the Greek or in the Hebrew Bible, the word parent doesn't even exist a single time. It does exist in modern Hebrew, but it doesn't exist in biblical Hebrew. It didn't exist back then. Every time you'd expect to say parent, it always says father or mother. That's why it doesn't say honor your parents and you will live long on the earth. That's not the commandment. It says honor your father and mother. And so there are two verbs. If we could wave a magic wand and get rid of the word parenting and only have fathering and mothering, all of this would get super clear. Because I actually think gender is about fathering and mothering. I think that when we are trying, this is where the confusion in our culture has really erupted, is that we don't understand that when you're raising a young boy or a young girl, a son or daughter, when you begin to engender the things that you want them to do, why you would train a son differently than a daughter, every one of those things is because you're preparing them to be a father or mother. That is why gender exists. We know that from Genesis 1, right? Male and female, he created them. And then he said, be fruitful and multiply. So he created male and female in order to form this thing called the family. That's the reason why it exists. And when you confuse young children about their gender, the primary thing that's occurring is you are robbing from them the future of being a father or a mother. And I think that even if you're staying single for your whole life, like Mother Teresa was single, but she was still a mother. Like even if you decide, I want to give my life for whatever cause and want to choose not to raise a physical family, then you should still, if you're a man, father spiritual sons like Paul. Paul was single and he constantly called himself a father. And he called Timothy his son. Nobody is exempt from this. Everybody who is a male is a aspiring father, and everyone who is a female is a aspiring mother. That's what those gender categories are all about. And so when you get into the realm of parenting, it's really important to separate those. And I think that because the culture is confused about the nature of parenting, they only see one thing, one androgynous, non-gendered activity. They have chosen to make parenting mothering. So when I hear, when I read parenting books or when I hear people talk about parenting, I only hear it's like 98% mothering, 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 mothering. And, our culture hates fathering. It doesn't understand fathering. This goes back to our first conversation about the nature of the high demand, high support father. There's something, mothers exist and are wired to really dial into the specific and especially immediate needs of her children, right? Right. A lot of this comes from the need to care for infants, and that's a beautiful thing. And man, it's so wonderful for children to have that present, constantly empathetic person in their life who's mothering them. But there's also a need for them to be pushed into the future, for somebody to see who they could be and to begin to raise the bar and create challenge in their life. And so, and mothers can do this, but I think when mothers are really good at this, they're really fathering children, right? And in some ways, I think the best thing to allow these genders to fully express all of their innate wiring in the context of the family. And if outside the context of the family, a woman wants to experience something that's different than that, that's fine. Or a man wants to experience something. But in the family, when both husband and wife, mother and father choose to mother the children and nobody takes on responsibility of the father, then you're going to be holding your kids back. You're taking from them something that's an innate part of who, what they need for their own character development and for their future. And so I think that, and this is such a unpopular message, because to suggest this is there's several major objections people have. And none of the objections I think are in truth. They're really coming from a spirit of empathy. So one major objection is empathy for single mothers. It seems like, you know, there's a understandable concern people have, which is single motherhood is incredibly difficult. These women are heroes. They are working hard to do everything they can to keep their family together. Many of them have been abandoned by the father of their children. And on top of all the struggles they're going to inevitably experience, you're going to add to that the reality that you'll never be a good father and your children will always be disadvantaged. Like, what kind of monster are you to be saying this? Now, the monster you are is somebody who needs to tell the truth and say, these women are amazing. They're heroes. Many of the problems in their families are caused by the father. There are certainly exceptions to that. There are women who have brought this on themselves, but there are many amazing single mothers out there, and we're not trying to denigrate them, but this is the impulse that out of compassion, we're going to hide the nature of the truth is not a good impulse. Like, we need to be able to do both. We can't redefine truth and therefore re-engineer all of society and all of us just decline into increasing struggle and instability because we refuse to face our empathy is causing us to say things that aren't true. So the other situation I think people are really conscious of is same-sex families. And so if you have two men or two women raising children, are the children going to inevitably miss something, right? And of course, the answer is yes, of course they are. First of all, they're not going to, you are just by designing that kind of family, they're not going to have the advantage of their biological mother and father. And you've actually created that often in many cases through things like surrogacy. But even if you adopt and rescue a child who otherwise would be in a worse situation, it's important to acknowledge again the truth that in that relationship, they are going to likely lack any one half of that equation. You know, it's having two fathers or two mothers is not the ideal design for a family. The ideal design is that there be a biological father and a biological mother raising children. And there are all kinds of exceptions to that that are necessary because of the fall and because of circumstances, but we shouldn't get confused about what's ideal. And we should, as a society, understand that and we should promote that.
Yeah. Thank you for saying all that. And that's one of the things that I have started telling single mothers who ask me on my Instagram page, like, what should I do? I'm like, you got to get them around someone who can father them.
That's right.
Find a coach, find some man in the church, find some like jujitsu or whatever.
Yes.
And get him around your son, especially around other men. Let me just ask logistically, have you got a hard cutoff in 4 minutes here?
We're good. Yeah, I'm good. I can go a lot later.
Okay. I won't take you too much longer. I just want to make sure we get to another one or two here. It's funny that you said that about the role of mother being much more right now, much more instantaneous in the needs that are covered. Because the next one that I've got here is I'm going to read the tweet here. Quote, a father is God's plan for teaching children delayed gratification. One of the gifts you can give your kids is to be a brick wall in a few carefully chosen areas of their life. Love includes helping our kids learn to deal with the storm of emotions that comes when no means no. End quote. And I think that's exactly the opposite of what you just said about mothering. Do you want to touch on that just in terms of the actual fathering message there?
Yeah. Yeah. This is something that we need to agree is a positive in a child's life, that sometimes they, especially if they're raised in an affluent situation, they need to be challenged. And part of that challenge is that somebody has to be able to say no to them. And so there is a, I would say, a trend in the parenting world. Again, that's the parenting synonymous with mothering world. And that is that you don't want to ever say no to a child. Just distract them, redirect them endlessly, like try to make, because what's in them and all their impulses are always positive. Of course, we see that with young children, right? Like, and so there, that's the intuition that's really behind this idea. Now, you don't want to be, you know, constantly tyrannizing your children, right? There are certainly ways to way overdo this. And some people have been raised by fathers or mothers who have done that, but it's really important that there be somebody in a child's life who is that brick wall, who says, here are the standards, here are the consequences, and that they feel like themselves slamming up against that wall. And I've noticed something too. I think that when a child can't find the brick wall, they get anxious and they get hyperactive. I think a yes. a lot of that anxiety and hyperactivity that you see in young children is they're trying to find their bearings and nobody is providing any kind of real boundaries to them that they can't find a way to overthrow. And so oftentimes when you're fighting with your 3 or 4 or 5 year old who's throwing fits and trying to figure out, can I overthrow this family? Can I overthrow this man? And the man's like, no, you can't. Like, this is my family and you're going to obey these rules. And these are the consequences if you don't. And we're not going to capitulate to your emotional storms or whatever. We're going to be kind. We're going to be compassionate. We're going to be understanding, but we're not going to give in. That I think that actually creates a lot of peace for children. And so I think that's how it might look in the young stages. In the later stages, you know, one of the things that I've talked about how I'm challenged being oftentimes a high support, low demand parent. And so like one of the things that I've had to tell my kids is, I need you guys, when you pick something like, you know, a hobby, like a musical instrument, something that I know is going to be hard. You're going to hit that dip. You're going to have all the enjoyment. Yay, piano sounds awesome. And then, you know, 3 months later, you're like, I don't really feel like practicing anymore. Okay. I think part of good fathering, and mothers certainly can do this as well, but I think that oftentimes if a mother's really dialing into the empathy, oftentimes the father needs to step into this role. And I think it's really well designed for the male to play this role. And that is to say, look, I will help you learn this thing, but you have to commit for like 2 years. And this is what this looks like. And you can explore maybe a few instruments before you commit. But at some point, when you choose to commit, I'm going to put resources into this. I'm going to help you. And one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that you don't switch. I want you to experience what it's like to become proficient in something. And so oftentimes our kids don't know what it's like to be proficient. And so we want to give them that advantage. And I think that the father who's able to hold their child to those commitments that they've made, and even sometimes as they're getting older, I love it when kids are getting into their middle school teenage years, actually writing these things out as contracts. You know, I'm going to put $500 into this. You're committing to this. Here are the bullet points. And then 3 months later, when they're hitting the dip and they're out of energy and they're like, I kind of done with this. I want to move on. Another shiny object syndrome. You pull it out and say, okay, come here. Let's look at what we did. Remember what I put in? The answer is no. You can't move on. You are becoming proficient in this. You agree to this. And I want you to experience what it's like to be a disciplined person and to actually achieve mastery in something. And that always takes discipline. And to be the kind of father to give that incredible gift to your children of learning what it's like to get to the place in their own life where they're struggling and they want to quit. And then they have to find within themselves, whatever that place is, to keep moving, to keep going. That is that brick wall I'm talking about. And of course, I want to emphasize, like, there are unkind, ways to do this, and there are encouraging ways to do this. But what I'm trying to signal in the tweet is fathers need to understand that there are areas, and you can pick the areas. Like, this is not every area. Pick the areas, you know, in your life where you're going to be the brick wall, and that is a blessing to your children.
Yes, I 100% agree. And very anecdotally, this is the very first thing that we did to get our family back on track when I was off the handle. And that obviously led the kids to being certain ways, which is to say they didn't react well because I wasn't reacting well. But the first thing I did that saw results was, oh, hey, I'm not going to let you do that. And then to be like nonchalant and just set the boundary. Yes. And the anxiety and the anger and the tantrums continued for a couple of weeks. And then they were like, oh, you're serious. Wow. Imagine that. And they,
yes, like, I'm not in charge.
Yeah, exactly. And the fear, can you imagine being a tiny little kid with no resources in terms of like mental faculty compared to an adult? You're almost like, you can't do anything, but you think you can, you think you're alone. And if you are in that leadership position, how terrifying would you be? How terrified would you be as a small child being in charge and your dad's not even there for you?
Right.
And I know that. And because, guys, if you're listening to all these kind of things that Jeremy's saying, yeah, you were trying to apply them to your children as a father, but how would you have felt if your dad did these things to you? I always think about that. I always go, man, as a son myself, how would I have reacted to this? In the time I can see, I wouldn't have been happy briefly, but man, I would love to have had a high demand father. I would love to have had these boundaries around which I could then figure out who I was in goodness and like in a field that was prepared before me so that I didn't have to tromp through like bugs to get to what I now have. So anyway, think about that from your perspective as a son and then a father, how you can do this. So I know we're past time now. I really appreciate this, Jeremy. This has been one of the most fun that I've had because I'm like, you said the thing, tell me about it. And then I can, you know, have some pre-made questions as it were, but it's so good because man, I look sometimes and I'm like, you must have like hundreds of thousands of followers because every story that has like a tweet in it, I'm like, how do I save this? I can't save a story on Instagram. What's going on? I need to be able to save this because it's such wisdom. So I really appreciate you sharing that with me and with us because there's a dearth of this, as I'm sure you understand, with people being able to share that wisdom. So thank you. Where should people find you if they want more? Any links you want to drop in, we'll put those in the show notes as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You could follow me on Twitter, Instagram. Those are places, yeah, like Kurt said, that I like to hang out. LinkedIn. I post some things over there too. And yeah, familyteams.com. You can see kind of what we have going on in terms of the different programs, online courses, coaching opportunities that we do. We try to do a lot of these family teams weekends in different parts of the country. So if you're following family teams on Instagram or on our email list, you'll, and I try to publish an email about once a week, trying to get back into that. And then I also take that email and do a podcast around it with some members of our community. So there's a Family Teams podcast as well. I have a Substack that I personally just, that's at the edge of my thinking. And then I like to read those essays on my personal podcast to interact with folks about sharpening whatever kind of these thoughts are. So those are some of the places I hang out.
Brilliant. All right, Dads, thank you for listening. Jeremy, thank you for being here, and we'll catch you guys in the next one. Thank you for listening to the Dad Work Podcast. That's it for this episode, but if you would like to stay in touch between weekly episodes, why don't you go over to Instagram and follow me there, because I drop a number of things throughout the week that are related to what we talk about on this podcast, but usually go a little bit deeper, provide some tips. You can find me on Instagram at dadwork.curt. That's dadwork.curt. And please, if you have been getting something out of this podcast, if it has touched you, if it has improved your marriage, your parenting, or your life, would you please leave a quick review on Apple or Spotify? Leave a rating. If you have a few extra seconds, leave a quick review. That's the best way that we can get this work in the hands of more fathers. And I truly believe that we change the world one father at a time, because each father that parents better, that loves better, raises children who do the same. And in just a couple of generations, I feel like we could be living in a world much better than the one we live in today. Your review will help along that path. And I thank you so much for being here to listen. Until next week, we'll see you then.